Hey, Jamie, I've got a question for you.
What do you want, Tom?
Who's on the podcast this coming Friday? Is it someone big?
Boy.
Is it a big one? Shall I bother listening this week?
Yeah. If I was going to say take.
And I would say off.
No.
Your trousers.
No, no. Take.
Me out.
No, take.
Paddy McGuinness.
No, take.
Take on me.
Take that.
Wow.
Have a little patience.
But hang on, presumably you haven't got all three of them, have you? Presumably you've just got one of them.
Buddy, we have all three of them on the podcast. They've released a new album. It's coming out. They're going on tour. They talk about the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, on everything that happened in Take That.
The ins, the outs.
And they reveal it all this Friday.
Exclusively.
On Private Parts.
That's a big one. I'm going to listen to that.
Hello, I'm Pete Strauss, and welcome to this week's episode of The Mediaverse. Every week we try and sometimes succeed to answer the biggest questions facing the media industry today. I'm joined by the single most significant figure in media today, an unstoppable force of charisma, a senior producer of ferocious talent, and he's on close personal terms with every single person who has ever engaged with any piece of media in any way ever. What he doesn't know about media isn't worth knowing. It's Tom Payne.
Wow, that's I think this is my favourite part of the week, you're doing those.
It's getting harder to write, because I've set the bar, like, really high.
Like, stupidly high to begin with.
I know. I should have gone in, like, oh, he's a quite good senior producer. And then I could have, like, gone up and up and up.
So in a year's time, where are you going to be with these things in a year's time?
I think I'm going to have to go the other way and get really negative. He's terrible. This week we're mixing up the format again. Instead of focusing on one big topic, we've each brought in five stories from the Mediaverse, and we'll be hammering through them one at a time. I've got about nine stories here, so I'm just going to pick some at random.
Okay. Well, I have four, so let's start with you then, shall we?
Let's start with me. I want to talk about Eden. Have you heard about Eden?
I have heard about Eden.
Eden, for those at home who are not sure it's a Channel 4 show that's starting on Monday, I believe, and they got 23 people. 10 women and 13 men to go live in a remote part of Scotland for a whole year. And it's basically, it's like Shipwrecked in that, but it's for a year. And they don't have, like, where Shipwrecked has, like, camera crews and it lasts about a week or two or something like that. This is a whole year. And as well as, like, creating, like, their shelter and finding food and hunting and stuff like that, they've basically got to find a way to live. So they've got to create a new society for a year. So it's a bit like Castaway, but they've got to completely live off the hand. They don't have buildings to live in and stuff like that.
That's insane. So has this already happened? They've already been there and done it?
It started in March.
Okay.
So they've been there 4 months. So they've got no contact with the outside world. Even crew are embedded. So, like, they don't leave either.
That's a hell of a job application, isn't it?
I know, man.
I'm not sure I could do that.
I absolutely couldn't. I'd hate that.
As a 30-year-old man, I think I'm over that.
And your wife would be upset.
I mean, she'd be slightly disappointed.
And yeah, it's 600 acres, and they've done fixed rig over 600 acres.
So and Kia Films have done this, haven't they?
Yeah.
I think it's the biggest thing they've ever done.
It's
huge feat just to even set this up, let alone make it for a year.
I admire when Channel 4 are quite good with this. You know when they just do those, like, TV does, like, do you remember when they crashed that plane?
Yeah.
And they just do these huge, like, social experiments and these, like, huge high budget, like, when Big Brother started out, Big Brother was like an innovative, amazing social experiment, and there was Nasty Nick and stuff like that. Then over the years it got turned into putting, like, Katie Price in there and her arguing with her mum.
It was good with it, it was genius. It was literally everyone watched Big Brother when it first started.
Exactly. It was so intriguing, wasn't it? And then it turned into this weird sideshow. But I think this is such an amazing idea. Like, the fact that I'm annoyed that I didn't come up with it. Apparently, like, it was like one of the commissioners at Channel 4 is his idea, and he just approached the production company and was like, do you want to make this show?
Wow.
And they went, yeah, of course.
Like, who'd say no to that?
Absolutely. Even the crew, like, they're three embedded crew members in, so they'll be part of it as well. So as well as filming it, they'll be part of the
amazing experience. They'll get paid to do that as well.
I know.
It's incredible.
The overtime on that.
I know.
360.
That's a hell of an invoice after a year.
24/7. Yeah, I did a bit more than that, yeah. It's absolutely incredible,
isn't it? So when's it start? When's it on?
Monday.
Wow.
So that's Monday.
So what was it, every week for the next, or are they doing it in batches, or?
I don't know how it works. I don't know if that's like, they're doing a Monday episode that sums up like the first 3 months, and then they do it like four episodes like that, or if you'll stick with them for ages. But it's absolutely incredible, isn't it?
Do you know if there's any like social media part to it, or is it just...
I think it's literally just that. But they won't know about Donald Trump. They won't know about Brexit. They won't know about...
Cool. Yeah, of course.
Any of this
like
stuff.
Like Nice that happened this morning, they won't know about any of this stuff.
No idea. It's absolutely like...
I'm not sure I'd like that.
There was actually... I listened to a podcast, This American Life, right? And you know Japan has like mad game shows.
Yeah.
There was this one where they got this guy to live in a flat, no contact with the outside world, and he had to apply for competitions until he earned 10 grand by winning competitions.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's a great idea, right? But he was in there for like a year and they didn't tell him, like he signed a contract kind of absentmindedly.
Yeah.
Didn't tell him that they were live streaming it. And he became like this huge celebrity in Japan.
Oh my God.
And had no idea.
And he stepped out after a year and everyone knew who he was.
Yeah, well actually he stepped out after a year and then they took him to South Korea and made him do it again. And he was like out of his mind. And he didn't know he knew he was being filmed, but he didn't know it was like so he was doing weird stuff. And he was like a stand-up, so he'd like practice routines and stuff like that. And then when it ended, they just like immediately took him from the flat into a TV studio. Loads of thousands of screaming fans. And his face on like huge newspapers and magazines, everyone knew who he was. And apparently like he had like a bit of an adverse reaction to it.
That's bonkers. I'm not... Yeah, I mean, having gone from obscurity, not... knowing your own success and then coming out and seeing that, that's a bit much. I think that would,
insane.
That would do my head in.
I felt like, so he did want to be famous. So like after the initial kind of like, oh God, that's so weird. He kind of embraced it. But now he's kind of slipped further and further out of the headlines in Japan. And now he's just this weird kind of, and now he can't take not having that level of fame again.
Yeah. That's what it's so quick these days to lose that level of fame. I was listening to Anna Faris's podcast and she had a YouTuber and I can't for the life of me remember his name. He was saying that YouTubers, he reckons on average of about 2.5 years lifespan of being famous YouTubers. And they make quite a lot of money, they do pretty well, and then they just drop off a cliff.
Yeah.
It's amazing how quick it's happening that people can be famous, like really famous in quite a big way for that amount of period of time, and then
it just completely
just disappear.
There's an interview with KSI, actually, I think in The Telegraph, where he showed a surprising amount of self-awareness, where he was just like, I know I'm not going to be famous forever. I'm going to make Hey, Where's the Sunshine?
Yeah,
I'm a flash in the pan. I play computer games. It seems to resonate with people. They're all going to get older and go into their 20s and not watch me anymore.
Yeah,
I'm just going to do what I do whilst they do it.
At least he's honest about it.
And he's still gaining subscribers at the moment. But like, I like that kind of refreshing honesty. He's like, yeah, I've got a shelf life.
But a few of them will start broadening out and doing different stuff. And they will... Like, YouTube is not going to be here forever.
No.
Those people making content on YouTube isn't going to be here forever. But if they're clever and they move in the right way,
yeah,
they can be sustainable. It's just being self-conscious enough to know that that platform and you on that platform aren't forever. It is for a shelf span. If you can move on with the times quickly.
Is that if you can grow up with your audience or move with the times? Yeah.
I guess that's why they're all writing books and doing DVD deals.
And that's why like a few of them will slightly do a bit of few TV things to kind of be like fingers in pies kind of thing. Yeah.
So moving on from that,
yes,
moving swiftly into one of mine, I think it segues quite nicely. So BuzzFeed Motion Pictures are readying their first ever feature film called Brother Orange, and they partnered with Warner Brothers over it.
Nice.
And having us, we talked about, you know, 23 reasons why BuzzFeed should make TV the other week, and clearly they're making movies.
This has happened a few times with a podcast where we say something and then about a week later.
There's another one coming up later where it's exactly the same thing. I think the whole world is listening to us and taking...
I don't want to call us tastemakers. But I'm going to do it anyway.
I think we should.
We are tastemakers.
So yeah, it's really interesting. They're moving into feature-length movies.
I wonder why movies and not TV. And how are they going to release it? Is it a theatrical release? In
Well, they haven't said how they're going to release it. I think I imagine it's going to be theatrical.
Yeah.
And funny sort of way, I guess they team up Warner Brothers. It might be easy to just create one piece of content.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to do a series and find distribution. This is, you know, they'll own it as well, so they're not working with channels to distribute it or Netflix. They'll own the content with Warner Brothers and they can... do what they want with the IP, but I think it's really interesting that these companies are starting to move, like, you know, Vice starting a TV channel, BuzzFeed moving into motion pictures.
Absolutely. Everyone always wants to be what they're not, don't they?
Yeah.
Everyone wants a bite of every bit of pie.
Like, they're massive doing what they do now, so why not be massive making movies as well?
Does it say what Brother Orange is about?
It tells the story of a strange and serendipitous BuzzFeed post that went crazy viral in China.
I think I remember this story. He wrote like a long article about it. It's like one guy got very famous in China for some reason. Yeah, like some weird article, and then he wrote all the follow-up about it, and I can't remember why. But yeah, that happened to one of BuzzFeed's employees, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what it's about.
That's interesting. Nice.
Why not?
I'll watch it.
Next one from you.
Next from me. I was going to talk about Mr. Robot.
Have you seen the first two?
Mr. Robot, right, was one of those where I watched the first three episodes of season one.
Right.
Loved it. Thought that's brilliant. Left on that cliffhanger where like he pushes him off the, you know, when they meet at the pier. Pushes him off, right? And I was like, oh, that's so good. And then I never watched it anymore.
It is unbelievable. First series is unbelievable. I just watched the first two episodes of season two, and it's getting darker. It's already pretty. It's getting a bit more messed up. It's genius.
Was it you that was saying like The Verge did some collaboration with?
Yes, it's ongoing. So they're doing a half-hour live stream straight after the episode airs, talking about the episode and talking through the tech behind it and how it's actually done, and because it's not all made up, it's all based in reality. Like most of it could actually happen.
Yeah.
So they're kind of dissecting it and talking about it a bit like the shows about Game of Thrones, you know, when they talk through the episode. It's a similar side of that, but it's a bit more techy, it's a bit more in depth, and it's quite a clever collaboration, I think.
That's an awesome idea, man. I do need to watch more of it. The reason why I'm talking about it today is that they did the premiere on Twitter with no warning at all. They just tweeted it out.
They leaked it. Yeah.
It's so cool.
More and more people should be doing this.
Absolutely, man. It's just such... It feels like they're doing everything right at the moment, doesn't it?
They're using social media in a really clever and knowing way. They know what their brand is, they know what their audience is, and they're completely playing into it. And more shows should be doing stuff like that.
Do you reckon because, obviously, it's a really tech-orientated show,
yeah,
that the people involved and behind it obviously understand the power of this more?
Yeah.
So are embracing stuff like that.
Yeah, I completely think so.
And they're doing that collaboration with Amazon, aren't they? So they release an episode when it's on America, yeah, comes out here and stuff like that.
They know what they're doing.
Like Breaking Bad did. And also, the other thing that they did was, it was on primetime in America, mm-hmm, and they put four F words in there, and there was no uproar about it.
Is that not a strange thing in America?
It's a very strange thing in America.
Really?
Yeah. So it apparently like it's very unexpected, doesn't happen very often. Like if you hear an F word at around 9 PM,
yeah,
people usually kick off, but apparently it just kind of slipped under the radar and people are becoming a bit more tolerant of it.
That's really interesting.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that show. You need to watch more of it.
Yeah, I will. Immediately after this podcast. I'm still mad at it.
But okay, so I'm gonna talk about the one and only PewDiePie.
PewDiePie!
Well, that's not just him, that's unfair. So the story is that PewDiePie and other YouTubers took money from Warner Brothers for positive game reviews, with an adequate disclosure that they were sponsored videos. So essentially, the Federal Trade Commission in the States has come to a settlement with Warner Brothers, because essentially Warner Brothers paid these YouTubers undisclosed large amounts of money to do at least one tweet or Facebook post about the game, as well as produce videos with a string of caveats to avoid showing it in a negative light. So essentially, they weren't allowed to say anything bad about it, and in the description box there had to be a direct link for people to go buy that game.
Yeah.
And the FTC have said there was not adequate disclosure that these were paid for videos. So the audiences are watching their favourite gamers play these games with glowing reviews of them, clicking links to go buy them, and the FTC went, you probably shouldn't do that, which I think is fair enough.
What does adequate disclosure mean? Is it just doing like hashtag ad, like in the title,
strict way. I think what they say is that if you click on a video, the viewer has to easily be able to see if that's a sponsored piece of content.
Yeah.
And the FTC have gone, they haven't done that in this case. It doesn't have to add in the title, although that helps, or it should be in the thumbnail, or it should be in the first line description. But they've said that it hasn't happened.
It's happened a few times. We spoke about this before, like to a much lesser extent. Zoella's been accused of doing this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Not to the same extent as this.
No.
But like she'll recommend like a product that and not put ad in it, and people suggest she doesn't use that product and she's been paid off for it.
Yeah, but it's such a grey area because...
Absolutely it is, isn't it? Yeah.
So like some of the stuff that we do, like with Jamie, he hasn't been paid to do it, so it's not technically an ad.
Yeah.
So like the film reviews we do...
Jamie Lang's
never paid to do them.
Yeah.
But we go along, we interview them, we don't even really give reviews of the movie or whatever, but it's still promoting it to a certain way. We don't have to say that's an ad because no one's been paid to do it.
Is that the distinction? So if Jamie got paid by, we just did Legend of Tarzan.
Yeah.
If they paid Jamie...
If you got £100 to do it, we'd have to disclose it. This was a sponsored piece of content.
Really?
He didn't get paid a single penny for it. It's just an ad.
I mean, yeah, it's such a grey area. PewDiePie has actually responded. He did a video that, when I checked just before I came in, it got 5.6 million views, called The PewDiePie Scandal.
Okay.
And he said, a lot of YouTubers were involved in the sponsorship, but since my name is the biggest YouTuber, my name is the only one that pops up. Basically, what happened was we weren't required to disclose. I still did it. Some other YouTubers actually didn't disclose. Which sounds a bit like, you know, when you got in trouble in school, like everyone in your class was doing something, and then you're like, oh, I missed, but he was doing it as well. That's what his defence is.
And because he's the biggest, he's the most influential, so of course he has to say something, and of course he's going to be the one from the headlines, because he's going to get people to read it.
He said, all of these news articles are using me as a clickbait, putting my name to shame, and I didn't even do anything wrong. Like, well, you have.
Yeah, clearly has, so the FTC wouldn't.
Clearly have, but they wouldn't be writing about anything, and the FTC wouldn't get involved.
Yeah.
And it's like, and they're well within their rights to mention your name. Like, you're not going to mention some minuscule YouTuber with, well, relatively minuscule with 100,000 when you can get PewDiePie.
Yeah.
So is he the most popular YouTuber?
He is the biggest YouTuber in the world.
He's got an X stupid amount of followers, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Cool. Next story. This one. Tom, this gets slightly out of the media, but it's kind of involved.
Okay.
You've recently bought a pair of Air Jordans, haven't you?
I do.
Are you wearing them today?
No, I'm wearing another pair of my Nikes today. I do love a good pair of Air Jordans.
This is just a little stat about Michael Jordan.
Okay.
Michael Jordan is still the second richest athlete in the world, behind only Floyd Mayweather. And in 2013, which is 20 years after he retired from basketball, 1993, he made $90 million in 2013.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Air Jordans. How did he make $90 million?
Air Jordans.
Wow.
He's earning an insane amount of money. He's got a net worth of $650 million. And basically what happened was when they debuted Air Jordans, he used to wear them in 1985 when he played. And the NBA used to fine him $5,000 a game. Nike would pay all of his fines, obviously.
Yeah.
And like people would say, that's a stupid decision. And now he's earning this obscene money 20 years after he retired. Incredible.
Yeah, that is incredible.
I just thought that was a really interesting little fact.
It's amazing foresight to go, as a brand, I am more valuable than that. I will make this money 10 times over by doing this.
He was, in a sense, bigger than the sport.
Yep, I still love buying Air Jordans, so
it's worked. I've owned pairs of Air Jordans. He's 51. He's the most. He's the highest earning retired athlete of all time.
Round of applause, Michael Jordan.
Well done, Mike.
Yeah,
welcome on the podcast anytime you like, Michael.
Okay, so my next one. Apple is apparently eyeing up to bid for the rights to show Formula One. This kind of ties into two or three podcasts ago. I said that Apple should buy all the TV rights to all sports because
they have
piles of cash. So it's from an experienced F1 journalist has said that apparently Apple have said they're a potential buyer and they're in the running to buy an amount of rights for the F1.
Well, of course, Tim Cook is a regular listener to the podcast. Hello, Tim. Welcome.
I think it's such a clever move.
If they
had F1, a bit of football, a bit of NFL, it doesn't have to be every single one, but if they had an amount of each of them, they said, if you bought an Apple TV, you get all these for free.
F1 properly as well. I know my brother's a huge fan of F1. Like, people, the rights seem to be up for sale a lot. I swear it swaps around, like BBC and Channel 4, like all of the time, right? Sky as well, they create the F1 channel. People properly move around with that sport.
Yeah.
So if Apple TV got rights, people would get Apple TVs just
And also
that.
I think it would tie in second screen beautifully. You know, if you had an Apple TV broadcasting F1 and on your big TV at home, and you had iPads and phones lying around that could tie in with that experience, I think it would take it to a different level. And VR, who knows what's coming next, but I think
they can make it so interactive, couldn't they? They could change. That'd be incredible.
Yeah, it would change how we consume sport. I think it would take it away from the Sky Sports of this world. And
Sky Sports must be quite worried, mustn't they, like with this impending.
I'd be terrified.
Well, they had BT Sport as well, which is still a concern for them.
Yeah.
Stuff like this must really get their backs.
The amount of cash, Apple, literal cash they have lying around, they could outbid all of them for every single vote.
I know a few years ago they had more money available than the US Federal Reserve,
which
is absolutely incredible. Yeah.
So I might buy myself an Apple TV. Yeah, maybe. Like, I do, yeah. Incidentally, did you see UFC got bought for $4 billion?
I know. It's amazing.
That sport has blown up like nothing else. $4 billion.
It's an incredible amount of money.
And I think they said something like the original, the people who just sold it bought it for $10 million each. I think it was 15, 20 years ago. And now just sold it for $4 billion. As far as investments go,
that's a decent return.
Is that Dana White's still going to stay on as president?
Okay.
But he's going to get paid like an obscene amount of money a year. But he made it in from just like, it was just this weird semi-illegal thing in lots of states into this huge conglomerate. And they're quite well known for not paying their fighters a huge amount of money. So their profit margins are just through the roof.
Wow.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really impressive.
Next story, this one at Say. For those that don't know, Liz Warner, who is the co-founder of Bethy, did a BAFTA television lecture where she spoke about the TV industry, and she described TV as old, boring and dying. And she said it's risk-averse, culturally bland programming. Now, she's done this a few times where she's really lashed out at TV. I want to ask you, do you think she's right? And if so, why is that happening?
I think to a certain extent she is right. I think it's really brave of her to stand up on stage in front of those people.
Yeah, I think she's upset a lot of people.
Running a pretty big production company.
Yeah.
But I think TV needs a bit of a stab. It needs more people like her to stand on stage and go, what has happened to us in the industry? Why are we not pushing things forward? I mean, Eden is a great project.
Yeah.
It's not crazy impressive. Like, it's impressive, but it's not like blowing my mind in the way that Big Brother did when it first came on, or...
You could accuse Eden of being... Do you remember Castaway?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a million miles away from that.
No, it's kind of that. Like, I don't feel TV has massively moved on in a big way. Not the same rate that other industries, other media industries are moving on.
Absolutely.
No one's taking risks in the same way. No one's doing...
Do you think people aren't taking risks because... And I think Liz argued this as well, because there is the threat of digital and online and YouTube Red and Netflix, Amazon, BuzzFeed now, Google, whoever, doing their own content, that people are just so wanting to cling on to the ratings. So they BBC commissions Goodnight Sweetheart and all these other old city, Dad's Army, all of this. They're just going for absolute bankers, just stuff that will guarantee you a certain amount of viewers because they don't want to take the risk. They want an absolute...
Yeah, I imagine they're going, all the risk-taking is happening on digital, and that's happening elsewhere.
Yeah.
All the interesting, crazier stuff is happening on different platforms. So they're going, well, what about the people who don't want that stuff? Let's just cater for them. Possibly that might be the mindset. I think they've got to start taking some risks though. Like Channel 4 is that.
Yeah.
I remember growing up thinking Channel 4 were the edgy channel. You know, that was the channel I watched growing up.
They used to have like Blue Jam and stuff like that, the Chris Morris thing, and just like incredible kind of like, no one else would have touched it with a barge pole. Brass Eye as well.
I was really still on top of the Olympic Stadium the other day, and I could see the Big Brother house.
Oh, really?
Not the Big Brother house. Big Breakfast house.
Ah.
See the Big Breakfast house. And I kind of went, what happened to that type of content? What happened to that anarchic,
that anarchy. Yeah.
Unplanned, anything could happen TV? And that was breakfast telly. I mean, could you imagine that being on breakfast TV right now?
Because they are moving more towards that kind of live TV thing, right? Because that's what they can offer that Netflix either can't or doesn't.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So they're moving towards, but they're not embracing the anarchy. It's just Britain's Got Talent, X Factor. Again, they're just absolute bankers, aren't they? ITV just bought The Voice, stuff like that.
Yeah, so it's just boring.
I do agree with her, but like, I don't know why. I'm speculating when I say it's because commissioners are too afraid to take risks and they want to keep their jobs and stuff like that. Well, mate, is it a problem when, like, people aren't coming out with the right ideas?
I know. I think there's a lot of creative people in the industry. I don't think ideas is the problem. I think money and people being brave enough to commission.
Money's potentially a huge issue. Obviously, all budgets have shrunk massively.
Yeah.
So now
people trying to do more with less.
Exactly. Yeah. So when stuff like Eden comes along, you think, oh, right, that's great. They've thrown a load of money at that. Like, they're going to, in theory, get a good program. Like, they've invested heavily in that to create good content. Whereas now it's, you know, your usual kind of tags like grand a minute or whatever.
What British TV do you watch regularly?
It's a great question. To be honest, outside of, if David Attenborough does something, I watch that. I watch football.
Yeah.
And that's where I stop
I watched The Apprentice, weirdly.
Yeah, I kind of secretly love The Apprentice.
I secretly love The Apprentice. Although the two of the things it's churned out, like Donald Trump on the American one and Katie Hopkins on the UK one, that's its legacy.
Mm-hmm. It's not a great legacy.
Two of the most deplorable people. What about you? What do you watch on the UK TV?
First Dates, I quite like.
Yeah, I watch First Dates.
Gogglebox, I used to like. I'm less bothered about it these days.
I've never sat through a full episode, to be honest.
Yeah, Jess loves it. I'm not that bothered about it. It's all right. I like the novelty to begin with, and I'm just like,
yeah.
If I was going to spend 45 minutes watching something, I'd rather watch something rather than other people watching something.
Apparently, when Channel 4 originally commissioned Peep Show, right, their advice to the creators of Peep Show was like, we want something with two guys just watching TV and commenting on what they're seeing on TV, just right. Like one shot on those two guys, which suggests like the seed for Gogglebox had been in there for years and years and years, and then for some reason just didn't come out until fairly recently. I don't know. I've watched most. It's mainly American TV.
Yeah, completely American TV.
Particularly in terms of comedy, I think America is wiping the floor of the UK.
Yeah,
absolutely destroying it. In fact, if people are listening, there's a program called Nathan For You. Have you watched Nathan For You?
Love Nathan For You.
Oh, it's incredible, man. It's the funniest thing, and it's doing it hitting camera in this like incredible. Well, not hitting camera, like, but using the camera in like really incredible ways, and I just. Oh, it's so innovative and it's so mad. And you watch something like that and you're like, it's Comedy Central in America have done it and they've taken this, it's a huge risk. It doesn't rate very well, but if they just because it's a good program, they stick with it.
Yeah.
Because I don't think, people often criticise America for like flogging a dead horse and like making Big Bang Theory run for 500 seasons.
Which I'm not a big fan of.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of it. But like, I appreciate that kind of like, they're embracing it, they're trying. Like, they will stick with things as well. They'll give things time. Whereas here, like, six episodes, if you haven't cut through, it's like, all right, you're gone. No matter how quickly well received it.
Why do you think British comedy has died a death? Because we clearly got good comedians. Like, stand-up comedian-wise, I think Britain has a pretty good set of stand-up comedians. So why are we not getting away good comedy TV programmes? Other than panel shows, which is...
I honestly don't know. I would say when I used to work at Comedy Central, like, the amount of, I don't know if it's because Comedy Central is slightly like, everyone sends their great ideas to Channel 4 and the BBC, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know, like, a lot of the scripts we get sent through, we didn't turn away loads of good ideas. There wasn't like loads and loads and loads of amazing ideas being fired at us. Every now and then there'd be one that I was like, that is incredible. Okay. That is brilliant. We should make that. And then we'll get turned down for X, Y, Z, usually because they're like, let's get a young person in it, even if it's not particularly funny. Or that I don't know. I don't know why it's not working. I mean, it's part of my job to try and find out why.
Catastrophe is probably the last British comedy I watched.
And
season two wasn't great. Season one was genius, I thought.
Catastrophe's like good. Like, I like it. Incidentally, I saw Rob Delaney once at Highbury in Islington Station help a woman carry her suitcases down the stairs.
What a lovely man.
Nice man.
From his Twitter account, I wouldn't imagine him doing that, but.
He's savage on his Twitter account.
Yeah.
He's amazing because he was like a kind of jobbing LA comedian, right? Not doing a huge amount, and through Twitter, built his career. Which is absolutely really incredible. Terrible. Like, he got voted funniest man on Twitter a few years ago and stuff like that. He's created this huge career.
Yeah.
I love Rob Delaney.
But
even Catastrophe is like, it's quite good. It's not The Office. It's not Alan Partridge. It's not Ali G. It's not Space.
But the first season was good enough for me to go, wow, for a British comedy, that was quite good.
Yes.
Which is not a great
indictment. Yeah, it's like the bar's so low. Yeah. Like, Stuart Lee's Comedy Vehicle, which just got cancelled. It's not a sitcom, but that's the only other bit of British comedy I watch at the moment.
Come on, British comedy.
Come on, British comedy.
Okay, so my fourth and probably final one is all about chatbots. So Pizza Hut is using chatbots to essentially, you can have a conversation with Pizza Hut. It isn't really happening, it's an AI bot answering you.
Yeah.
Where you can order pizza.
Nice.
Rather than having to phone them or text them, you can have a conversation with this fake person.
Yeah.
And pizza will turn up at your house. That's not particularly like media related, but I think it's really interesting what you could do with that in terms of stories and content and
what that means.
I love this idea of AI and meaning to have a conversation on my phone with someone that isn't real.
Yeah.
But you could almost create your own stories. It's almost like your own narrative you could come up with.
It feels like one of those innovations that was like, you know, when you were a kid, right? And you'd watch like what they imagine the future to be in the 90s, and they imagine like could that feels like that idea has come to life, like that kind of like what people imagine the future of the 90s is going to be. That feels,
but in terms
like
of like second screen, or can you imagine a TV series that was running weekly where the audience in between those two episodes could have conversations with these chatbots that could then get in, put into the next episode, and you could almost become part of your own narrative in the TV show. And
yeah,
I think it's like, I think that is really interesting where that's going to go. This whole idea of AI and people interacting with things and data, and I know it's really geeky and you get a bit stuck in the weeds, but I think I know it's Pizza Hut and that's not a great use of it, but at least people are starting to play around with
this
stuff.
People are starting to embrace it, and it's going to start to get normalised and stuff like that.
And who's going to be the first media company to actually fully, like, you can imagine BuzzFeed or Vice embracing a chat. Imagine having a BuzzFeed chatbot, you know.
It's amazing that Pizza Hut are leading the way.
It's always a pizza company. It's always Domino's or Pizza Hut. They always do the interesting stuff.
It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, it is mad. Clearly got very good profit margins.
Yeah, oh, they must do, man. They charge 20 quid for
apparently
pizza.
Apparently pizza costs like £1.40 to actually make.
If that.
Yeah.
Particularly Pizza Hut pizza. I won't slag them off.
Yeah, if you want to sponsor the podcast, get in touch.
You're still welcome. I stopped by sending to
we'll some free pizza. Take some free pizza.
We should get some free pizza.
Yeah, we definitely should.
Let's look for a sponsor.
Okay.
We should get that one down the road, actually.
Yeah, it's down the pizza.
Right, we can't have a podcast at the moment without mentioning Pokemon Go.
You said that was such a...
disdain.
Yeah, that's probably what I'm looking for. Have you actually played it?
One of the guys in the office let me use it for a little bit. It's called augmented reality, isn't it? I'm going to tell you some facts about Pokemon Go.
Another fact.
Only launched in the UK yesterday, but since it's released, Nintendo's shares have gone up 50%. It's the biggest mobile gaming app ever when it comes to daily active users. It's been installed twice as many times as Tinder. It has 21 million active daily users in the US alone, which takes it past Twitter and brings it neck and neck with Snapchat and Google Maps.
That is bonkers. It's only about 2 weeks old.
It's insane, isn't it? My friend showed me at the weekend and he had to get like a US iTunes account and stuff like that and hack into it.
I'm already seeing things where brands are starting to get on board and do like branded places where you can go and get Pokemon.
Yeah.
And brand integrations.
There was a coffee shop called Huge or something like that in LA, and I don't know how they did it, but apparently you can make, like, they made their coffee shop like a hotspot for Pokemon to bring people into the store, and then when they're there, they go like, oh, get a latte. Great idea.
That's a great idea.
Other things that have happened as a result are, like, someone in Wyoming found a dead body.
Okay, as you do.
What else happened? A guy got caught cheating on his girlfriend.
How the hell did that happen?
Because she saw where he was playing the game and he was playing it at his ex-girlfriend's house. It's the nerdiest way to get caught.
Oh my God. That's a great story though.
It's a great story. And people are charging to be trainers now. So they're charging, I think it's $30 an hour to be like, I'll teach you how to get Charizard.
What is there to...
I don't know. I mean,
we're the two most unlikely people to probably play this game.
It's one of those things that, like, when I hear about it, it makes me feel like a lot older than I am. I'm still in my 20s and I just don't get this.
Did you play the original Pokemon?
No, I remember the cards, right? I remember kind of vaguely
playing. On the Game Boy, did you have the actual...
No, did you?
Yeah.
Is it good?
Not really. Wasn't my thing.
There's loads of them, wasn't there? I don't know.
I had a friend at school who was unbelievably obsessed with it.
Like, really?
Unbelievably obsessed with it.
I remember hearing all the horror stories where it'd be like, someone got stabbed to steal a Charizard.
Yeah.
A Pikachu. And all
I think I've got this aversion to, I think everyone in the office will probably agree that if everyone gets obsessed with something, I do have the opposite reaction. When everyone got obsessed with Uber Eats about 2 weeks ago, I couldn't use the app because...
Have you not used Uber Eats yet?
No.
I have got 5 free lunches for Uber Eats. I've been embracing it. And then they emailed me to say, sorry, your lunch was late, and sent me another £20 voucher.
That was nice then.
But I don't remember my lunch ever being late.
No.
And I didn't pay for it anyway. It was going great.
But Pokemon, I think, is it's really clever. I think the game, I downloaded it this morning, played for about 2 minutes, and then deleted it because...
Is it fun?
Not really. But I can see how people would get addicted to it.
I was walking around on my lunch break and you see loads of people just like heads down staring at their phone, and they're just, it's so abundantly obvious.
There's an amazing Casey Neistat vlog, I think the one from yesterday, where he went past about 3 different people and stopped when playing Pokemon.
Apparently, yeah, there's like all these like pictures on Reddit of like, it's brought all these people together, and it'll be a group of like 10 people you'd never expect to see together going like, we're playing Pokemon. And that's quite nice, isn't it? It's bringing people together.
Yeah.
It's kind of an example of tech kind of bringing people out of their homes. It's quite a social kind of app and game, isn't it?
I love that AR is becoming used and it's becoming a thing, because it's, everyone bangs on about VR and putting these headsets on. That's not, I don't, for me, that's not the future of media. That's like, it's very immersive and it's great for gaming and movies will probably be awesome at it, but in terms of everyday life, augmented reality, I think,
it's absolutely
really cool. And at least things are starting to come out into the mainstream, they're actually using them.
VR and 3D films, I feel like, were those things where, like, heard about them when I was a child, remember them being around, no one spoke about them for like 15 years, and then suddenly they came back and I was like, this is the future. And I was like, you've not mentioned this. I don't know if they're just perfecting the technology and it's got a lot more advanced. And
I think when PlayStation, they're bringing out a VR version of the PS4 later this year, apparently, which I'll probably get. Because in the geekiest sense, I think I'm really intrigued to see what that can, like, what that experience is like.
Yeah.
But in terms of day to day, like, VR is, for me, it's not going to become a thing. But AR could become a thing. Like, I mean, you could imagine a world when information was happening around you in an augmented way that was personalised to you. And I can imagine that happening.
I mean, if this is anything to go by, there's going to be a million different copycat apps of this.
Isn't there? 100%.
They apply exactly the same principles.
Yeah.
But none of them are Pokemon and don't have this huge following. That sadly marks the end of this week's episode. Please subscribe, leave positive reviews and follow us on Twitter at MediaversePod and like us on Facebook. Listen back to old episodes if you haven't already, and we're going to get guests in soon. So
we are.
If you've got any suggestions of people you want me and Tom to speak to, let us know. We've got a few lined up that we think you're going to love. Thank you for listening.
That was the Mediaverse.
Bye.